I'm Christopher Purdy. Welcome to today's edition of All Sides Weekend. Today we're going to talk about the arts in Central Ohio and points north, east, south, and west with our guest today. Karen Bell is Associate Vice President, the Arts Initiative for The Ohio State University, and she is just back from New York, and we're going to hear all about her trip in just a moment. Stephen Anderson, Artistic Director of CATCO and the Phoenix Theater. He is at the Center of Theater and What is Great on Stages throughout Central Ohio. And Professor Richard Blatty, who is the interim director of the School of Music at The Ohio State University, and you have said I could call you Rick.
That's absolutely
well,
right.
I thank you very much, Professor Blatty. Thank you very much. We're going to have some conversation going on. We're going to talk about the arts. We're going to talk about trends in the arts and what's going on with the good folks here in Ohio. And we will want your phone calls later in the program. But Karen Bell, among the many projects on your desk is the collaboration with the Royal Shakespeare Company that you are fostering between our campus and theirs, if you will, in England. And you are just probably just literally off a plane from New York. What's going on?
Well, I think, Chris, we've talked before about the educational program that is at the core of our relationship with the RSC. And we have 40 teachers who are out in the schools teaching Stand Up for Shakespeare America. See it early, do it on your feet, and see it live. And we're now in the see it live portion of our relationship. So the RSC, the Royal Shakespeare Company, is coming to America, coming to New York City, July 6th through August 14th. So this is
next year.
Next year in 2011. And they have not been to America for that length of time in probably decades. And they will be doing five fabulous plays. I've seen them all, and they're incredible. And on July 12th, Ohio State gets the house. And we're doing a big fundraiser for our education program so we can sustain this program for years to come. And so we were in New York talking to friends about helping us support this amazing July 12th gala of Romeo and Juliet.
One of the things I want to talk about with each of you is, and Karen, you and I have touched on this before, and I think it's important, is building helping young people build lives in the arts, which is at the centerpiece, I think, of what you're talking
Absolutely.
About here, because you have these Royal Shakespeare Company actors and teachers in high schools and middle schools, I think, in
Even
our
elementary,
area.
Elementary, yes.
And elementary schools.
Yes.
And you're doing an exchange. But what I also am told is you are actually bringing the actual Globe Theater to New York.
That is the truth, yes. And as a matter of fact, it's going to be called the Scarlet and Gray Stage. That's how much they like us. And let me also give credit where credit is due, and that's to the Wexners. They have supported both the educational piece and are helping with the gala and with the RSC to bring this stage to New York.
When the teachers go into the schools, what's their mandate? What kind of, I guess, quantifiable result are you looking for after a few months or a few weeks?
Well, this is the wonderful thing that we have the ability to do at Ohio State is the research to say, what is it that, what is this validating? And the preliminary research already shows that reading, writing, and comprehension is affected. We have a third grade class where their scores were 99% and significantly higher. I mean, it's 99% passed the standardized test. And that is significantly higher than any previous year. And another second grade class, much higher testing in their cohort. So we're doing much, more holistic research. And in another year, we will have some, I hope, dramatic results.
Rick Blatty, just as before we went on the air, you did say it is all about collaboration, and I think what Karen Bell is describing is it really speaks to that very much. What's your experience with the state of the arts now and training young artists and where they go? I mean, in terms of collaboration.
Yeah, I think it's great to hear Karen talk about getting this into as many levels of education as we possibly can, because I do see the benefits of how the arts can broaden minds and it can be adaptable to other things. But for me, the essence of this is that kids are just a lot more arts aware. It bothers me sometimes that we put so much emphasis on the reading, writing, arithmetic, and the No Child Left Behind and the standardized tests, when it's proving day after day that that alone is not an education, that an education involves the spirit and the capacity to ask questions, not just to answer. I was talking to some students a few weeks ago, and I had given them a little history lesson in one of our rehearsals. And the young man reminded me that, you know, the method that students use now and call it research is to laser beam into the internet and get just the answer that they want, as opposed to the way most of us did our research, which was to go to a card catalog and find a lot of stuff that we didn't care to know about, but we learned it anyway. And we kind of went to this pie-shaped wedge that got us to the point we wanted, but we had a reference. We had a lot of background material. And to me, the kids don't have that perspective now today. So the arts education is valuable for art's sake. And the student that is aware of that has a much broader perspective.
Stephen, I know that you work not only on the main stages in town, but your work takes you all over. Tell us about the kind of atypical places where you work making theater or using theater to address social issues.
Yeah. Well, it spans everything from the Ohio Attorney General's office, where we provide actors in role acting as children who are suspected of being abused so that they can learn to question, to the prisons, to schools, to where we're sort of famous for finding new places to do, you know, to use theater as a means to teach other subjects. Theater can provide context for the text, if you will. If we're trying to teach children or anyone to learn by rote, they have no hooks to put it on, and so they don't retain it. Plus, you can't possibly know everything that you need to know to survive in a 21st century economy. You have to learn to think creatively. There was that article in Newsweek a couple of weeks ago about creativity and the means that we need to use to foster it.
You are now, I don't think it's appropriate to say you're running two theater companies because you're combining
two
theater
companies.
We are one.
We are family.
Update us on the Catco Phoenix collaboration or marriage,
okay,
shall we say.
Well, yeah, no, it is in fact a marriage. And the new company will be, the spine of the company is education and outreach. And what happens on the stage is still a very important part, but it feeds what happens in our various things from preschool initiatives to senior citizens.
And talk about now, one thing too is when we do this program, very often I know the expectation is we have to talk about entertainment, which is fine. I have no problem with, God knows, I have no problem with entertainment. But with the three of you here, it seems like we can foster a kind of different kind of conversation about lives in the arts, about how we get to the point where we can make entertainment and we can get people laughing or reacting in such ways. So what's the path? What's the trajectory to get to that place where it can be entertaining? What's the work of it?
Well, I think you already started that conversation with collaboration. We're seeing much more of that. Arts used to be really siloed in this community. Mm-hmm. And you sort of created your turf and you marked it out. And if anybody dared to put their toe in it, then there would be repercussions. Last weekend, we saw Shadowbox performing in Schiller Park for Actors Theater. There were almost 4,000 people in the park. Now, that was good for Actors Theater. They saw a new audience. It was good for Shadowbox. They had a downtown presence. And so we're going to see much more of that kind of work in this community. And partially it's being done right now for necessity. But what we're going to find is that it actually is it's a positive thing for our community.
Yeah, I think we all learned from the experience. our percussion department has been going downtown now for years and sharing their talents with the dancers. And Karen was very instrumental in getting that started.
That's a big hit.
It is a big hit.
Drums and
dance
downtown.
I think they're up to eight now.
Yeah.
And you know, when that happens, everybody gets stretched a little bit. And if I could say anything to the Central Ohio community, it would be to get out of your comfort zone just a little bit, just to take one opportunity a year and attend a concert that you think you may not enjoy or you don't know much about. Or go, if you're an avid musician, go to a dance recital. Or, you know, if you haven't been to the theater for a while, do that. But to me, it's all about growing. And I think our society is a little bit too compartmentalized and too short-term driven. You know, we live in sound bites and teasers on the news, and we don't get the full story. I think people need to just reach out a little bit and explore.
Here's something that I can back up. Karen Bell actually was behind this as well. I was approached by the percussion department at Ohio State to do radio, and I said, an hour of drums on the radio? How that? We can't do that. We do it every year. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the variety of that, the sound palette of that is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. It's something I look forward to every year. So mm-hmm. I had to get out of my comfort zone, too, to kind of make mm-hmm. that leap there. How much, Stephen Anderson, roughly percentage-wise, what we see in the Rife Center and in your theaters, when we buy our tickets and we go to the shows, what percentage of that is the work of this company? I mean, you're saying that there's more education, there's more out. There's a lot that the general public may not see.
Mm-hmm. No. In the new company, it's going to be at least 50-50.
Really?
As we move forward, yeah. No, there's and for the Phoenix, it was probably more 60-40 in those days. So we're going to see, and you're going to see more collaboration between the companies there as well. So we're bringing in a new show that will premiere here and then move on off Broadway as our opening show, and so we're hoping to see more of that kind of work happening here as well, making Columbus the kind of place that people say, oh, well, you could try that, we could do that here.
You know, what I'm seeing in Columbus right now, I love hearing about collaboration, and whether it's Town and Gown or arts organizations, I am seeing so many independent artists sticking around. And we're working with Whistling in the Dark and down in the South Campus Gateway and Artillery down there. And they are teaching, they are performing, they are selling their work. And I think, you know, Columbus has had a hard time branding itself. And that friend of mine said, we just haven't found our destiny. I think our destiny is upon us. And I think it's about Creative Columbus. It is about these independent artists. It's about our wonderful arts institutions that are, continuing to give us great work. So Creative Columbus is, I think, who we are, and just getting stronger.
And don't leave out the Ohio State University, which has trained these folks who have decided that Columbus is really a pretty good place to live. Mm-hmm. So how are they going to have their artistic lives here?
And well, more staying.
What you're saying, too, I think speaks to, we have all kinds of wonderful education. We have the Ohio State University. We have Capital. We have all kinds of great institutions training our artists, but you're giving them reasons to stay. After they graduate, you're giving them reasons to stay and work and live and support themselves, which I think is the next step that's been – when you said Creative Columbus, I think that was the component that was missing. And now what I'm hearing is they can actually pay a bill occasionally as working artists, which may it continue. Long may it continue. Thanks. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. Today we're talking about the arts in Central Ohio. We're talking about the arts with the Royal Shakespeare Company and in New York. We're talking about arts in prisons and in schools with CATCO. We're talking about academia and not academia. We're talking with Karen Bell, who is the Associate Vice President of the Arts Initiative for The Ohio State University. Stephen Anderson, Artistic Director of – is there a new title?
CATCO Phoenix.
CATCO Phoenix. Thank you very much. And Professor Richard Blatty, who is the Interim Director of the School of Music at The Ohio State University. And we will be back to take your calls in 1 minute.
Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU news team.
In the first quarter of this year, Franklin County saw almost 2,800 home foreclosures, a nearly 14% increase over the same period last year.
The individual that was in the home, I believe his business failed, so he had no income and was not able to keep the house.
Hear the latest in local and national news with Morning Edition on WOSU 89.7 FM.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News, 82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20. Sunshine today and a high of 92. Clear skies tonight and a low of 70 degrees. Sunshine for Saturday and a high of 92.
Support for WOSU comes from the law firm Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, offering legal services to Central Ohio since 1936. Isaac Brandt Ledman & Teeter, big enough to win, small enough to care. On the web at isaacbrandt.com.
All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
That is our peerless associate producer, Amy Jurevich. Thank you, Amy, for keeping us all up to speed here. I'm Christopher Purdy. We're talking about the arts on this edition of All Sides Weekend. And we invite your phone calls, 614-292-8513. You can also send us an email to allsides@wosu.org with your questions or comment for Karen Bell, Stephen Anderson, and Richard Blatty. And we have Peter on the line, who's just back from seeing a production of Macbeth. Peter, are you there?
Yes, I saw a production of Macbeth in the middle of May at the Globe Theater in London. It was part of their, I think it was Rogues and Royals series they were doing. And it was just spectacular. I mean, we saw it in the middle of the afternoon. It was a little hot. We were in the groundling area, which is the open area in front of the stage. But in this production, they had put a large, kind of like a nylon, we call it like a tarp, but with slits in it. If people could put their heads up through the slits, I guess that represented the underworld in Macbeth. I stood back, and I thought I'd have a lot of room to walk around. I really didn't. But it was still an incredible production, and just so neat, you know, the witches moving in and out of the audience. The musicians up in the balcony. It was just incredible.
You know, Peter, we've been doing Macbeth with a third grade class. And this third grade class, and obviously you're not doing it from beginning to end, but you're taking, you know, excerpts of it. But the real text, and these kids love the words. They love the real text. And it's this third grade class. You then ask them a big question. Is killing wrong? And these third graders are looking into themselves, are thinking about these big life questions coming from Macbeth. And these are the kids, as a matter of fact, that I was saying, whose scores have gone up dramatically in reading and writing and comprehension because they're experiencing the text.
Thank you, Peter, for your call. Thanks so much for that. Well, now, I'm not somebody that has a school-age child at home anymore, so I can't really speak with authority about what's going on in the schools. But I'm getting the fact that all of you and the work that you're all doing are filling in for what's been taken away over the – I may be wrong, but that's my impression. How am I doing with that?
And that's Stephen? The hope, certainly, is that as art teachers and music teachers dwindle in the classroom – that we can provide a piece of that. And who knows, in many ways that may be a great way for schools and arts institutions and institutions of higher learning to join hands, because that's really what it's going to be about, is that sort of personal connection.
And what we're doing is mostly we are working with STEM schools, science, technology, engineering, and math schools, and putting the STEAM mm-hmm. in STEM. And it really has been wonderful because they work in a project kind of experiential way often themselves, but getting the arts in there.
And it starts with with the entrepreneurial spirit of young people who may not have full-time employment, and they're doing this because they know what's at stake. Mm-hmm. And I think all of us are starting to realize that if we don't grab these opportunities now, we could be in a much worse place.
What do you tell a 21-year-old kid, Rick, who comes into your office? He's just about to graduate with a bachelor's from Ohio State in the arts or any place in music. And he says, what do I do next? Because he has this degree in trumpet or piano or voice, and he doesn't know what to do next, and he's 21, and he has something that is not an obviously marketable degree. What do you tell him?
Yeah, if it's not in education, if it's in performance, then most of them are seeking to go to grad school.
Right.
And I think what they're looking for there is maybe a different perspective and then possibly new connections and a new place in the world to experiment. But there is a lot of uncertainty, and we are wrestling with this question now, not only for the 21-year-old, but for the 34-year-old who's getting his master's or PhD or DMA. Because we are educating a lot of DMAs right now who are going out to find that – I mean, the story I tell is the last time there was a tuba opening, there were 350 tubas that showed up, and the statement was made, it's more difficult to be a tuba player, professional tuba player these days than it is to be a U.S. senator, because there's only 35, and that number could even be questioned. There's probably less than 35 full-time orchestras that would need a tuba.
A DMA is a
Doctor of Musical Arts, yeah.
Degree, okay.
It's a little different than the PhD.
Does one go for a DMA with an eye toward teaching? Is that why you get a DMA?
No, the DMAs are looking for that orchestral gig or that opera gig or, you know, doing some of that and doing some teaching perhaps, but teaching at the college level for sure.
Where are we in the trajectory, in the change, I think, in the arts, where we're getting to 50-50, Stephen, what you said earlier, where there might be room to hire people who will be working in schools and in atypical places and not always in the star parts of it, not always in the so-called, we know differently, glamour part of it. It's hard work wherever you do it. But are we shifting that way? Are we creating new employment opportunities? Do you see that happening nationally? Is there a trend there?
If you're going to succeed in the arts, you have to be highly entrepreneurial. Find an enormous number of ways in which you can use those skills you have and to build your skills so that, you know, I mean, that's when the Attorney General's Office called us, a very small company, 10 years ago or 7 years ago. And I said, well, why did you call us? And they said, well, when we asked around, people said you'd try anything.
Well,
and that's exactly the
distinction.
I think it was supposed to be a compliment. But.
Well, no, being told that 10 years ago, I think you were probably the first ones that were ever told that. That's very good, I think. Nowadays, as you say, you must. But back then, you didn't. That mindset, I don't think, was quite there. Mm-hmm. You know, what does a life in the arts offer, Karen Bell, and how does one get there? Assuming the talent, the drive.
You know, for all the years, almost 40 years that I've been, working with students in dance, I said, if you don't have to do it, then probably you should look for something else. It's hard. It really is. And in these last couple of years, I've been trying to work with people after they've graduated, young artists after they've graduated, and find new models. Right before I came here, I was in a meeting with some of these young artists. We talked about being entrepreneurial. And then when are you going to be entrepreneurial about your own work? Or when is it going to be bigger and out in the community? When is it going to be towards an educational? I mean, there are all sorts of strands, and we have to mine every strand. And it's a challenge. But, again, I'm very enthusiastic and optimistic. Surprisingly, me, optimistic.
She's optimistic today. Oh, good.
Write this down.
I am optimistic about the livelihood for artists in Columbus. Everybody's been talking about Wonderland, the old Wonder Bread factory that is going to have a renaissance and become this creative hub. And it will have studios, it will have shops, it will have design, it will have, the visual arts, the performing arts. And, you know, it's going to take some time and it will evolve. But I think it could be the anchor around which Columbus, you know, is its creative self.
You're talking about support from an infrastructure, from a building. That's a huge bakery. That's what it is, we said.
64,000 square feet,
right on 4th Street, going away from
right
downtown. It used to smell wonderful just driving
know.
By there.
Yes.
That's being converted, I guess, into arts space, artist space for living and working, apparently.
For working. And,
okay,
but
for working.
There's so much around that area that could then be converted to living.
Yes.
So you bring the whole area up.
What kind of support do you find, and this is for all of you, from the city, from politics, from the money people? I mean, we know about the Wexners and their incredible generosity that goes back years for all kinds of different activities. But what about in general? I mean,
Wonderland is getting some good support, city, state. Wise with tax credits and all of that. So that's a help.
You have to be out, Stephen Anderson, hustling for support. How's it going?
Well, it's very, very trying because there are so many basic human needs that need to be met. And so that's why there will be new models because, you know, when I began my career, if you had 40% earned income and 60% unearned income, you're a healthy organization. We're being pressed to be the opposite of that, or even 70% earned income and 30% unearned income. So that makes us creative, and it makes us look for new models, and it makes us not sit in our theaters and say, well, y'all should come.
Anymore. You can't.
Right. No,
yeah,
you can't possibly
you can't do it.
Be.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like what happened to libraries a while ago. Libraries used to be places where we're a destination. Now they're very interactive, and there are places where people go to build resumes on computers and to check out CDs and do all of, you know, the, and we didn't see that 20 years
ago. That's interesting, and I think you said that for the best reason, libraries are no longer like churches. They're not silent anymore. You know, you used to get shushed if you were in the library and you coughed or anything, and now there's buzz all the time in our libraries because people are working and functioning and doing things that they need the library for. The library has reinvented itself, which I think maybe the arts is doing as well. Rick Blatty, what's the story about getting students to be entrepreneurial when they're 18, when they come in the door? When they, you know, some of them have spent 10 years in practice rooms. You know, they're very talented young people. They're very, very gifted. And, you know, that doesn't guarantee a career, alas.
But I think you'd be surprised just how many are also the president of the student council, the running back on the football team. I mean, the old adage that 10% of the people do 90% of the work in the high schools is really true of arts kids. And they're intelligent, they're sharp, and they've developed dossiers and video records of their exploits in high school. It's amazing. I mean, they could practically be filmmakers.
Wonderful.
with what they have available to them on computers now. And they've already conquered how to do music manuscript on computers, and it's just the garage band concept has just taken over everything they do. So they're already pretty entrepreneurial, and it's getting more and more competitive to get into a program like OSU's. So they have to be. They have to kind of sell themselves and go out on these 3 and 4 and 5 visit campuses to do auditions and the other things they do. So they're already fairly well practiced. They get here, and what happens is they get kind of overwhelmed with what they have yet to learn. Many of them have a very high opinion of what they already know. But after they get through that humbling first and second year here, they're really delightful kids, and every year the bar gets raised.
Yeah. Having been a student over there in my dotage a few years ago, I must tell you, surrounded by my grandchildren who are students, you're quite right. I mean, I was so energized and rejuvenated by what and realized what I didn't know. I mean, I have yet to send a text message in my entire life, but, you know, they live that way.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yes. 292-8513 is the number to call. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. And I want to ask each of you, I want to shift the conversation a bit because we're in the middle of the summer now. There's really no it's hard to talk about a bona fide arts season anymore because things don't tend to stop anymore and go away. But for the sake of argument, indulge me. When the weather gets cooler and people start coming back to town and activity starts, you know, gearing up downtown and everywhere else, what are each of you looking forward to in terms of productions or performances or activities, arts-related, coming up in, forgive me, the fall season? How about you, Stephen?
Well, I'm going to start right now with what's happening immediately with Available Light doing Merrily We Roll Along, opening on the 18th with actors of 18th of August at the Rife Center.
Sondheim.
Stephen Sondheim. Very exciting, very sort of out of the box for them. At Actors Theater, they're doing Dark of the Moon right now until Labor Day, and it's a spectacular production. I saw that last week at their fundraiser. Whistling in the Dark. Help me, Karen, what's the name of that production?
Talk about
this
that.
I haven't seen it yet. This is the last weekend for Shipwrecked.
Shipwrecked.
And they are performing it in their new little space called the Green Room. And the unique thing about the Green Room is that they are using only they're reusing sets from other places. So things that were going in the dumpster are now being used for their sets, for their stage, and everything in the Green Room is as sustainable as possible. They're not giving out programs. It's written on the board. So they're doing Shipwrecked. This is the final weekend. They have Sundays at 7, live readings of plays in the Green Room. They are hosting the Solstice Theater Company's run of Dancing at
Lunasa.
Thank you.
What is that?
August 16th through 30th. Please come.
Oh, I wouldn't
please
miss that.
Come.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful place.
Where's the green room? I'm sorry.
It's right in the South Campus Gateway.
Right near
yes,
your office. Okay,
yep. You come out of the parking and you go to the left.
Okay.
And the last thing I'll say about that is they're hosting the Egyptian production of House of Flesh, September 22nd through 26th.
The things you learn when you ask. My goodness.
You
this,
said
I mean,
it.
I mean, there is no downtime then, what you're
There's
saying.
There's no
It's August
downtime.
And people are crazy.
Plenty going
yeah.
on.
Okay.
Yes.
How about you, Richard Blatty?
Well, we had quite an exodus in the spring. We lost four of our pillars of the community, if you will. Ed Adelson has gone on to New Zealand, and it's his position that I'm filling. Hilary Appelstadt, who's been with us for 20 years, is headed up to the University of Toronto.
Choral music. She's a great choral conductor.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wonderful.
Paul Robinson, who's been doing double bass for us for 30 years, retired. And Don Harris, who is an absolute fixture in this community, also retired. So we told Paul and Don they couldn't leave, and we're bringing both of them back. Don Harris is going to be the centerpiece of our Contemporary Music Festival this year, which has been a stellar project and is in cahoots with the Columbus Symphony. We're doing they are doing a piece that Don has written with the Koussevitzky Foundation sponsorship, and he's going to be our poster child this year. So we're really looking forward to that. Paul Robinson is going to come back and teach double bass for us while we're looking for someone long term. We were replacing Hillary, or trying to replace Hillary, with a fellow named Tom Hart, who's coming to us from the state of Iowa, and and Ed, nobody's going to replace Ed, so I'm just, you know, kind of going through the motions. But I like to say what the coaches say. We're not rebuilding, we're reloading, and we're going to come at this with all we got. And I think you'll see some exciting things on campus.
During the school year, at least, and I think not just during the school year, Weigel Hall is still busy. There are things going on all the time. And I know, talk a bit more about the downtown collaborations between the School of Music, dance and drums and opera.
Yeah, I think Karen really opened the door for us on all of that. And we'll be forever in her debt. We are trying to get into the Verne Reif more often with various projects. The percussionist came down last year to the art space and did a rather unique John Cage evening that she'll go into our memories forever. Opera has gone down and done a cabaret performance in November, and we're not sure exactly how that's going to work because we have some different leadership in opera this year. I don't know if it's been made public perhaps yet, but Peter Kozma is going off to California and will be doing some professional work out there. So Pat Wolliver, who's, of course, our chair of graduate studies and associate director, has been already on this, and he has completely planned the season, but it's too soon for us to make announcements about it. And you're going to see some really wonderful things happening in opera.
Hold that thought. We have to take a break for 90 seconds. We're going to come back. We have some people on hold. Do call us at 292-8513. We will get to these calls in the next break, I promise. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend, back in 90 seconds.
Thirty-five years ago, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert began reviewing films together on TV. Now, after multiple incarnations, the show known as At the Movies will have its final broadcast this weekend. On the next Fresh Air, we feature an interview from our archive with Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Be sure to watch Columbus on the Record on WOSU TV. WOSU News Director Mike Thompson talks with political analysts and news reporters about the top stories of the week. Columbus on the Record is Friday nights at 8:30. And on tonight's Columbus on the Record, a discussion of the Columbus income tax 1 year later, and John Kasich's newest ad and the death penalty in Ohio. Those discussions tonight at 8:30 on WOSU TV.
Support for WOSU comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation and supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
83 degrees in downtown Columbus. Sunshine today and a high of 92. Clear skies tonight and a low of 70. Sunshine and a slight chance of rain for Saturday, a high of 92. All Sides Weekend continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
I'm Christopher Purdy. We're back with All Sides Weekend with Karen Bell, Associate Vice President, the Arts Initiative for The Ohio State University. Stephen Anderson is Artistic Director of the newly rechristened Marriage, Catco Phoenix. And Richard Blotti is Interim Director of the School of Music at The Ohio State University, Professor of Music, and your area of expertise is winds.
Conducting.
Very good. At 292-8513 is the number to call. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.edu. Tom has been waiting patiently. Tom, thank you very much. You're on.
I just want to add voice to something that I think a lot of people in the general consumer community in the arts know and feel, but don't really know who to thank. So I would just like personally acknowledge and thank your panelists for the creativity and the passion and the dedication and the hard work that goes into the offerings that are happening in Columbus. You know, what we have here doesn't happen by accident, and it's also not something that you just sort of go to a menu and go this one. There's a whole lot more work involved, and I just want to tell you that you're appreciated by me and other people that may not realize it.
Tom, thank you, Tom. You can call back anytime you want, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, what's your number?
Yeah, very much. We got a couple of board chairs for you, Tom. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you. That's very generous
and very kind. 292-8513 is the number to call. Now, we talked about in the earlier segment of the program collaboration in theory, but I want to get specific because it's happening. I want to get to the nitty-gritty. Stephen Anderson, what kind of collaborations are ongoing that you can tell us about now?
Well, Ballet Met and Shadowbox with their Seven Deadly Sins, in which Shadowbox is creating an original score for a new ballet. I mean, that I think that's extraordinarily exciting. And then a very different kind of model would be The Last Smoker that I was talking about that will open the Catco season, because we're collaborating with a for-profit producer who is, in fact, enhancing this production financially by a large amount, and then it will be moved from here off-Broadway. That's a kind of collaboration we don't see a lot of, but I think we're going to see more of those kinds of for-profit and not-for-profit collaborations.
Tell me again the title of the work and tell me about the piece.
Okay. It's called The Last Smoker in America.
Last Smoker.
Okay. And it's a 90-minute musical, rock musical, about an America in which it becomes illegal to smoke, but it becomes illegal to do a whole lot of other things. That's sort of the beginning, and it just goes downhill from there. It's really over the top and great fun. There's a woman named Pam who can't quit smoking, and her next-door neighbor, Phyllis, is a vigilante and tries to catch her, and her kid is down in the basement, and he listens to so much rap music he thinks he's black, and it's a very irreverent Saturday Night Live sort of thing. So in fact, I just read the last draft of it this morning. It's written by Bill Russell, who wrote a show called Sideshow, which was about Siamese twins, a musical.
So it's a brand new piece.
It's brand new.
When's it coming up?
It opens the first part of October.
In the Rice Center.
In the Rice Center. Tickets go on sale next week on August the 18th. Thank you very much, Karen.
Yes.
August 18th, 469-0939.
Good for you. 469-0939 for tickets. The Last Smoker in America.
The Last Smoker in America.
And you had, Rick, a collaboration with Opera Columbus, I think, to tell us about.
We've been back and forth with Opera Columbus many, many times. In fact, a lot of our grad students are singing regularly for Opera Columbus. And Bill Boggs and all the folks have been very much in our scheme of things. Let me just make reference to a different kind of collaboration, which because we're in the Academy, we can take advantage of this. The hot button on our campus right now is interdisciplinary efforts, because that is the future, I think, for a lot of us in education. So I just want to let the public know that there's a lot of things happening that are a little bit behind the scenes but are still very exciting. We have a vocal health lab, for example, which is a wonderful collaboration between the medical school and our psychology folks and the music folks who bring their areas of expertise. And we've just hired a fellow from the Westminster Choir College whose name is Scott McCoy, who is just a very, very well-known person who will be on our campus in the fall and also in the spring. We have a music cognition lab that is really very well known around the world. And I was just in Minneapolis talking to someone in cognition who knew all about the work of David Huron. And,
brilliant. He's a brilliant man, David Huron.
Oh, absolutely. But just to understand how the mind perceives music, very interesting. We have an ethnomusicology lab that very few people know about that Udo Vill occupies and is kind of looking at music from a language perspective and also from the medical perspective. So a lot of those kind of collaborations. We're getting more and more into pedagogy and how that affects other departments on campus, for example, conducting, well, there's all kinds of dance connections there, whether it's the actual language that we use and as we're teaching those. But help me out here, Karen, the name of the
– La Bonne Notation.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, La Bonne Notation. And there's also the brain mapping involved. And, I mean, it's really a fascinating part of what it is we do and then has these kind of finger-like projections into all other aspects of society and how these things will play out. So that's some of the collaborations we're
looking
at.
Just in a nutshell, I mean, really, if you walk by these buildings, you have no idea that
absolutely
they're
right.
Seething
yeah.
with activity. Yeah. We do have an email, and I want to talk about this. I don't know if our listener maybe heard us wrong or whatever, but the email reads as follows. Your guest mentions how vigorously they're reloading with out-of-towners. What's wrong with Columbus natives? Are they too artistically and intellectually deficient? Even the arts are being outsourced. I'm not quite getting that we did that, but
it might actually refer to The Last Smoker in America, which is being cast out of town because they're paying for
they're
it.
They're paying for it. I mean, there is
frankly.
That.
You know, that's not the model for the future, that we would be importing artists, but that's the way this particular project was put together financially.
It is one way, too, to spread the word, to reflect back to the community of Columbus of what's going on. I mean, it's a huge event to rebuild the Globe Theater in New York and have Ohio State very much at the forefront of this collaboration with the Royal Shakespeare Company. But the point needs to be made. They've been here, and you've sent people there, Karen Bell.
Absolutely. And not only that, the other thing that the Arts Initiative is really involved with is working with these independent artists. And there are fabulous independent artists here in Columbus, and that's why my optimism. Some of the things that I've been seeing, Ohio Art League, it's a 100-year-old service organization to artists. We're working with them. The Gateway Film Center is working with them. They work with Couchfire Collective, this young entrepreneurial group of artists. They're the artists that put on Agora, where 4,000 people come down in Junction View and Grandview. We're also working with the medicine and their program. There's a medicine and the arts program. And so as we work with them, we're trying to get work for these independent artists.
Right.
And so these models are, you know, robust.
It's not just thinking outside the box. There is no box anymore. You know?
Exactly. Right. I mean, people come in with different ideas, and that's cross-fertilization of concepts. And our folks here from Columbus are going to various places around the country as well. So it's a conversation. It's two-sided.
We have a caller. Alan wants to talk about GCAC. Alan, hello. Are you there?
Yes, hi. How are you all?
Good.
Christopher, good hearing your voice as always. No one's mentioned yet that the Greater Columbus Arts Council has been sponsoring artists in the schools for, I think, close to 30 years now, which hires local artists and sends them out to work with kids all the way up through middle school and high school. And that's an enormously valuable service, getting arts into the schools.
Absolutely. And I, as a GCAC board member, I should have mentioned that. But thank you for mentioning it. It's true. And GCAC is really such an amazing organization. And I really see it looking at itself in some new ways, making sure that it is as productive to the artists in town as it can possibly be. Happily, the bed tax, which it funds it, has been staying fairly stable. So GCAC is in great shape to really continue to help artists, and you're right, they are in the schools.
And I can tell you that we're in my wife is with the Artists in Schools program. We're in contact with people from across the country, many of whom say, how did you get that in Columbus, and how can we do that elsewhere?
Right. You're right, Alan.
Alan, thank you as always for your call.
Thank you very much.
GCAC and the Greater and the Ohio Arts Council have taken a lot of financial hits lately. The news coming out of them has been bleak, but you know, they keep on keeping on. God bless them. They do.
The Ohio Arts Council, again, a board I'm with, is really taking a deep look at themselves and saying, how can we be as effective as possible? Might we be looking at policy as well as, you know, giving their grants, but really looking at new ways to be effective on behalf of artists?
They could probably be the leading lobbyists for the arts, as they've been, but I think that their focus might be thrust more in that direction. So what about the future? We have 8 minutes left for this program, and we're going to have more people calling 292-8513. What about the future? Where are we going, Richard Blatty?
Oh, wow.
You're the professor. You should know. You should know.
Yes, professor.
We learn from you.
8 minutes, huh? I cheated. I brought some inspiration here with
good.
Me. Because, you know, I knew you'd ask some profound question like this. I was at a conference a few weeks ago, and a wonderful composer, Minnesota composer named Libby Larson, quoted Martha Graham. And Martha Graham wrote this wonderful statement, "The value of practice. I believe that we learn by practice, whether it means to learn to dance by practicing dancing or to learn to live by practicing living. The principles are the same. In each, it is the performance of a precise set of acts, physical or intellectual, from which comes shape of achievement." I love that phrase, shape of achievement. A sense of one's being, a satisfaction of spirit. One becomes, in some area, an athlete of God.
I love that.
Isn't that wonderful?
God.
I think we have sold ourselves short as citizens of a country that has so many opportunities. And instead of going to the Museum of Art, this wonderful museum we have in Columbus on a Sunday afternoon, we go to the path of least resistance. We do something that's comfortable. We kind of find the lowest common denominator. And, boy, you know, the arts to me are an avenue to beauty and to something above and beyond oneself. And you know, my son lives in a town, I won't mention the name of the city south of us, but he doesn't have those opportunities. And he feels that every single day. How many people in Columbus really do take advantage of what we have to offer them? If every person in this community went to one thing that they wouldn't think to go to perhaps otherwise a year, just think of how much more vibrant the arts community could be. That's my challenge to the people of Columbus.
And I'll bet that wonderful statement by Martha Graham was probably written 70 years ago.
Oh, probably,
so it's very timely now.
Absolutely.
That kind of thing doesn't. How about you, Stephen Anderson?
Well, I'd like to flip the equation back because I think that what's going to happen here is that institutions are going to find different ways to reach out. I mean, when you know that the iPhone now you can have conversations in time with people that, you know, that you look into it, you see their face, you see there's art's not going to look like it used to look
right.
like. And interaction, YouTube has had a huge impact. You know, the computer technology has created situation, and flip cameras has created a situation in which, you know, teenagers are making films, and there's more art creation. What we have to do is figure out what our relevance is to that and how we become the sort of hub of that, as opposed to, you know, sort of sitting on the sidelines and saying, wish you'd come.
Are you are all of us in this room keeping up to date with technology? I am not. I mean, Sal down the hall, who's 30-something, sends texts for me because I don't know how to do it. But are we all – does it behoove us all to really keep one step ahead if possible of the technology?
At least to surround yourself with those who does.
Well, I do that. Okay. Do,
yes.
Yeah. I being the old man here, I do that. That's
I don't know. I'm finding it fascinating.
It is. No,
I'm on my
is.
Way to the Apple store to get this new iPhone. Yeah. I'm like, mine's ready to go. You know? And I will admit that when I signed on to Twitter and it said someone was following me, it kind of creeped me out. And I said, and it signed off right away.
I've never tweeted or tweeted. I haven't done that.
You've not been a twit?
I've not tweeted. No, but I Facebooked. But
he's
I haven't
probably
tweeted.
Been tweeted.
I've been tweeted, but I haven't tweeted myself yet. My God, we have to relearn the grammar, in fact, for everything else that's going on. Do you need to teach social media, or do they already know, the kids? Because they probably already know.
They
teach you. They teach me, certainly.
Absolutely. I mean, that always happens when I'm doing a PowerPoint or something. Somebody says, is there anyone under 20 in the room? You know, because there's something that always goes wrong.
I have no idea how to do this, right.
Yeah,
right.
But it is about the content. And
we
so,
lose that sometimes.
And that's where we are, you know, I think still somewhat relevant is, you know, we're working with young people and, you know, helping them practice.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And it's style over substance with them often. They really are looking for the substance, but they've got all the ways to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, not all of us are a techno phenom like Steve here.
Well, is there a way we can use the technology to foster better, more content? Can we go the other direction? Go than what we've been talking about? Is that possible? Is that
I think we have to.
Is that happening
now?
It's happening.
How would you do that now?
Yes.
How would you make
Well,
that
I'm not
happen?
Allowed to tell because it's not announced yet.
It's not in the press release yet. Sometimes I know in advance and I spill the Bible, but I would never do that.
Well, all you have to do is go into the new Ohio Union. There's no posters on the walls. They're flat screen TVs.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so they've figured it out. I think Steve's absolutely right. We have to find a hook. And once we get the foot in the door, it's usually kind of takes care of itself.
Okay, so 2 minutes left. What conversation are we going to have a year from now on this date about the arts? Karen Bell.
Ay, ay, ay. We will say, what a year we just had. Unprecedented with the number of activities that were happening, the number of collaborations, the partnerships, the visibility that the arts brought to Columbus.
Steven Anderson, Catco Phoenix,
wow.
On the way to Off-Broadway.
Well, Karen just did such a great job. We're gonna say that Catco Phoenix is a new place to be an incubator for new musicals. We're going to say that we've done a lot to change this community, and we're going to say that Columbus is a creative space.
And Richard Blatty.
We're going to have 25,000 more Toms who call in and say, thanks. This is a great place to live.
We welcome Tom and all his friends. And I wanted to make the time, I had 1 minute to ask you this, Richard Blatty, when high school kids who want to come to the Ohio State University to study the arts, what do they need to have? What is the best preparation so that you will accept them?
They need to know that all long-term goals in life are the ones that are the most meaningful. Short-term goals get you certain things immediately, but substantively change you. I think it's long-term goals that change you. And if they can focus on that and the discipline it takes to do practice what Martha Graham says, to practice, to enjoy the – I know this sounds trite, but to enjoy the journey – it's really about that. It's not about some definitive performance, because if they're waiting for that, they'll wait most of their lifetimes.
So you can wake up at my age and say, oh, my God, there's so much more to learn, which is a great reason
absolutely.
To get up in the morning.
It's a great thing.
Absolutely.
I'm Christopher Purdy. We have been talking about the arts. We have talked a great deal about Central Ohio, and we've talked a great deal about other than Central Ohio, because so much is going on with Karen Bell, who is she's vice president to me.
Thank you. Thank you for the promotion.
The Arts Initiative at the Ohio State University. Steven Anderson, who has been at the forefront of the arts in this community for many years, belying his youthful appearance here on radio. He is artistic director of the new marriage of Catco Phoenix. Look forward to that.
He's gorgeous.
And a man who looks his age.
He does, yes. Richard Blatty. Professor Richard Blatty is interim director of the School of Music at The Ohio State University, and I suspect he is going to be at the forefront of great things. I do thank you all for listening. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus, and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News. I'm Christopher Purdy.
Support for WOSU comes from Meijer, a family-owned Midwest supercenter supporting the local economy by offering a variety of homegrown produce from Ohio and all the markets Meijer serves. More information is available at Meijer.com.